Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Yud-Daladam and Aleph, four lines down. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss the issue of Lo Tidgorodu, Lo Tasu Agugadot Agudot. How is it possible that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel had two different practices? Isn't that a problem of breaking up into factions amongst Klal Yisrael? We need to have a consistent psak and a consistent din. How is it possible that Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai had differing practices? So the Gemara went through different iterations, including issues with regards to Megillah. How is it possible that we read the Megillah on multiple days? And then it asked about working on Erev Pesach, which also involves multiple practices that are associated with the working in the daytime, working at night. How do we reconcile all these issues? The Gemara in the end says that Reish Lakish believes that Beit Shammai and our Mishnah lo asu. Even though they had a differing opinion to Beit Hillel, they nevertheless, they followed the practice of Beit Hillel. It was only theoretically that they argued with them. And that is also the position of Rav. On the other hand, Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan believed that Beit Shammai acted on their halachic psak, and they did have a differing view than that of Beit Hillel, which they put into practice. So according to those that say lo asu, there's not really a question from our Mishnah because Beit Hillel was the psak, and even Beit Shammai conducted themselves like Beit Hillel. On the other hand, according to Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan, who said that Beit Shammai kept a distinct practice from Beit Hillel and that they follow their own psak, then well, how do we don't have a problem over here of lo tasu agudot agudot? So the Gemara first says, all right, Emat, let us understand this machloket over here as to whether Beit Shammai practiced based on their psak or not. When did this happen? Ilema kodem batkul. If this is before the heavenly voice, which is mentioned in the Gemara in the Eruvin, which came out and said that the halacha is like Beit Hillel, then my taima demand amar lo asu. So what's the reason behind the one who says that they didn't practice like their own psak Beit Shammai? Okay, before the batkul you have a machloket. Why can't Beit Shammai practice like their own position? Velalachar batkul. So now you're going to say it happened after the heavenly voice came out and said the halacha is like Beit Hillel. My taima demand amar asu. Then what's the reason behind the position that says that Beit Shammai kept their distinct practice, they followed their own psak? After the batkul, how could they go against the batkul? So Gemara says, Ibaitema kodem batkul, viibaitema lachar batkul. This is a technical discussion over here, a sidebar, just discussing as to which period would it be that Beit Shammai practiced differently than Beit Hillel. And now we have two possible answers. We have one possible answer is this is before the heavenly voice came out and said, Allah is ki Beit Hillel. And we have another possible answer that it is after the heavenly voice came out and said the halacha is like Beit Hillel. Ibaitema kodem batkul. Some say that it was prior to the batkul coming up. Ukagon, the Beit Hillel ruba. And Beit Hillel was the robe. So even prior to the batkul, Beit Hillel was the majority. So the halacha was like Beit Hillel. So lamandamar lo asu, the one who says that Beit Shammai did not follow their psak in reality or in practice, that's the ha Beit Hillel ruba. Because Beit Hillel was the rove, and therefore the halacha went like Beit Hillel. Amanda Amar Asu, according to those that say the Beit Shammai nevertheless practiced their halachic psak, Kiazlinam Bataruba Echadichea Dodininu. Rove is only governing when you have two equal parties on each side. If you have two parties that are equal, then the rove dictates. Halacha Beit Shammai Mechadadetve. Over here, in the Gemara Ne'erevin mentions this as well, that Beit Shammai were very sharp. And since they were very sharp, maybe that trumps the rove. And therefore, the Asu, Beit Shammai, followed their own position because they believed, despite that Beit Hillel was the rove, their position was more correct. And since it was more correct, they followed their own position despite being in the minority. Vid Bayitema Lachar Batkol. Some say it was after the heavenly voice came out. Mandamar lo Asu da Nafka Batkol. The one who says that Beit Shammai did not follow their Psak Halacha in practice is because there was a Batkol that said Halacha ge Beit Hillel. So therefore they practiced like Beit Hillel. Mandamar Asu. Going to one who says that they actually acted on their own psak, there's Rabbi Yeshua. That's like Rabbi Yeshua, Damar in Mashkechin Bebatgol, who says that we don't listen to heavenly voices. In the Gemara in Bava Batzia, he says, Lo b'shamayim hi. It's not for the heavens to determine halacha. Torah was given to mankind, and the decisions about the Torah are in mankind's hands. Whatever comes out from heaven will not be male umorid over here. Now, man damar asu, karinin kan lo tit godudu. Which is the basic question here. According to those that say that Beit Shammai had a separate practice based on their own psak from that of Beit Hillel, you have a problem of that you can't break up into factions and have different practices amongst Klal Yisrael. So answer that question in 1 second. Tosafot over here asks a question. He asks a similar question in Eruvin and in other places this discussion about Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai comes up. He says, why, by the Batkol, the heavenly voice of Beit Hillel, do we follow that Batkol? And we say the Halacha is like Beit Hillel. Whereas by the Machloket of Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, with regards to Tarnur Shalachnai, in the Gemara in Balbitzia, over there, Rabbi Eliezer, the Batkol, supported him, and nevertheless, we don't paskin like him. So Tosafot over here says, the reason might be because, in the case in Baba Metzia, Rabbi Eliezer was a Dat Yachid, and the heavenly voice came out to support him only out of kavod for Rabbi Eliezer. And that's why we don't follow it. Or, maybe the Bat Kol doesn't matter in Baba Metzia because it was supporting Rabbi Eliezer who was a Dat Yachid. On the other hand, the Bat Kol by Beit Hillel was supporting Beit Hillel who were the Rof. We just saw in the Gemara, they were the majority. And the Bat Kol came up to say, yes, follow Beit Hillel because they are the Rof. Well, why do I need a Bat Kol if Beit Hillel is the Rof? That's what the Gemara just said here, because Beit Shammai mechadadei tvei. Because Beit Shammai were sharper. Since they were sharper, we would have thought that maybe the halacha is like Beit Shammai. Along comes the Bat Kol to say no. It gives a stamp of approval to follow the Rov, the normative practices of following the majority. And that's why you paskin like Beit Hillel. So the Bat Kol by Beit Hillel is considered normative because it's supporting or giving a stamp of approval to a practice of following the majority. And therefore, it's not deviating from the norms of halacha. On the other hand, by Rabbi Eliezer, if we follow the Bat Kol, then we'd be deviating from those norms by paskin like a yachid and not a rabim. So in the end here, we come up with a explanation as to how it could be that Beit Shammai had a practice neged Beit Hillel, either after the Bat Kol, because they hold like Rabbi Yeshua lo b'shamayim, or prior to the Bat Kol, even though Beit Hillel was the Rov, nevertheless Beit Shammai kept their practice based on their own psak, because mechadadei tvei, they were sharper, and therefore they didn't believe that the Rov dictated, the majority dictated in that situation. Now we come back to the question, the basic question here, which is how do you have different practices amongst people? Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai are now having two different practices, according to those that say that they acted according to their psak. Then, how do we reconcile that? So now we have an answer from Abaye and an answer from Rova. The question might also apply to Megillah as well, which is that the original question posed by Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan was about Megillah. The question whether Rabbi Yochanan agrees that that's really a question. Some of the Rishonim believe that Rabbi Yochanan rejected it as not being a question because the whole establishment of Megillah was based on different times, and that's the halacha miikaro, and that's not called being factions. That's halacha that bifurcates the din according to where you live. But according to many of the Rishonim, that question still is outstanding as to why by Megillah is that practice not considered to be lo tasu agudot agudot. And so by Rava, when they're coming to answer here, they're answering for our Mishnah. If Beit Shammai had a differing practice from Beit Hillel, why is that? In addition to that, they're also answering with regards to the case of Megillah. The case of Melacha by Erev Pesach, we already determined that it's not considered agudot agudot, because even if you're machmir not to do Melacha, it's not obvious that you're doing it or desisting from Melacha because you believe it's asur. You might just simply be desisting from Melacha because you don't have anything to do. Since you don't have anything to do, that's why you're not doing Melacha. So there it's not obvious that there's a problem with what to go to do, because your practice does not necessarily make it obvious that you are differentiating from the minhag of doing malacha on that day. So now, Abaye says first, Amar Abaye ki amrin lo tidgorudu kon shnei batei dinim birachat. Lo tidgorudu only applies when you have two courts in the same city that have differing piskei halacha. Halolo morim kedivrei Beit Shammai, valug morim kedivrei Beit Hillel. One of the batei dinim follows the psak of Beit Shammai, and one of them follows the psak of Beit Hillel. Aval shtei batei dinim b'shtei ayarot leit namba. If you have two batei dinim in two different cities, that's fine. Differing cities is not a problem in different practices. The only thing a problem with different practices is when you're in the same city itself, then you can't have a division. Amar le Rova, va Beit Shammai Beit Hillel k'shtei batei dinim b'ir achat ami. Wait a minute, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel did not necessarily live in separate places. They lived in a single city, and yet they were like two different courts in the same city, and their practice differed within a single city. Elohama Rova, so Rova says, no, this is the distinction. A Beit Din in a single city, Peleg Morim Kedivrei Beit Shammai, Upeleg Morim Kedivrei Beit Hillel. There is a split amongst the court. Some of them paskin like Beit Hillel, and some of them paskin like Beit Shammai. There's an inconsistency in the psak of that court. But if you have two different courts in a single city, Leit Lamba, they can each go by their own practice, and that is fine. So the question between Abaye and Rova is, what is considered to be the smallest unit where you have to have consistency? According to Abaye, the smallest unit is a city. A city must be consistent in its practice, and therefore, if there are two bate dinim in a single city, they must be consistent. They cannot have differing practices, because this city is the smallest unit, which must be consistent in order not to be in violation of lo titgorudu. On the other hand, Rava believes that a beit din is the smallest unit, so any given beit din can have their own psak, and those that follow that beit din are within the context of that unit, and they're fine. So as long as there's a beit din that gives that psak, you can follow that beit din. Even if there are multiple bate dinim within a single city, that's okay. But if you have a single beit din that has differing opinions, that is problematic, and that's a problem of lo tasu agudot agudot, because there you are splitting the smallest unit, which is that of a beit din, and that's not allowed. So that's the answer of Abaye and Rava. Now, as far as the concern here between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, Rava makes it clear that he doesn't think Abaye's answer is correct, because Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel lived in intermingled situations or in common cities, and therefore Abaye's answer will not answer the question. Tosafot over here already raises the issue of Megillah. How does this answer the problem of Megillah? Now, as far as Rava is concerned, it's very easy to answer, because every unit is considered to be distinct, and that's why they have different practices. And even for Abaye, each of these areas, whether it's the Kfarim, the Ayarot, or the walled cities, they're all distinct areas or distinct units, and therefore their practices could be different. Tosafot would ask, but what about the B'nai Kfarim, the villagers that come into the city and read on Yom HaKnisa? It'd be one thing if they read in their own village, but now they're coming into the city and reading in the city, that should be a problem of Shnei Bati Dinim B'Yerachad according to Abaye. So Tosafot answers over here, it's a question in the Tosafot in Megillah, and it's a machloket bishonim as to whether the B'nai Kfarim, when they read on the Yom HaKnisa on the Monday and Thursday, do they read in the city, or do they read in the villages? So Tosafot over here says that this is a proof to the position of the Rabbeinu Chaim, that the villagers actually read in the village. And that's why going to Abaye, it's not a problem over here, because everybody read in their own location. The villagers read in their village, the city dwellers read in the city, and the walled cities read in the walled cities, and that's why it's not a problem. Lo tasu agudot, agudot. There are other Rishonim that say no, that villagers, even when they come into the city and read in the city, they are still considered to be a distinct entity, either because of the way they dress, and it's obvious that they're distinct, or it's because they don't belong to this city, and when they come in, they stay in a separate location, and they keep to themselves, and that's why they're considered to be a distinct group within the city. Others, like the Rosh, say there is no problem here, because the original enactment of the Megillah was that it be done in these places at different times. And since that's the original Kviyut HaLacha, there's no problem of Lo Tid Godudu. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan didn't address Reish Lakish's question from Megillah. And that's why Megillah will not be a question, even if the B'nai Kfarim read in the cities, because that was the way it was established originally. The Rashbah happens to mention that the question is not even from the B'nai Kfarim at all, because the B'nai Kfarim could read on the 14th, or they could read on the Yom HaKnisa. Since they have the possibility of reading on the 14th, then they're not considered to be Lo Tid Godudu when they read on the Yom HaKnisa. But the real question is from the 14th and the 15th, the walled to the unwalled cities, where you have a problem where the 14th may not read on the 15th, and the 15th may not read on the 14th, and to that Abaye's answer is sufficient, because there you're dealing with two different cities, and since you're dealing with two different cities, that's not considered to be a problem of lo titgorudu. So now, tashma, bimkomo shel Rabbi Eliezer yukortim etzim, lasod pachamim bishabbat, lasod barzel. In the city of Rabbi Eliezer, they used to chop wood on Shabbat itself to make coals in order to work the iron and make an ismail, to make a knife to perform Brit Milah even on Shabbat. So Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that not only are the Tzorchei Milah Doche Shabbat, but even the Hechshere Mitzvah, the things that allow you to perform the Milah, they're also Doche Shabbat. So the knife to do the Milah, according to Rabbi Akiva, who is the Baal Plukta over here, that knife, since you could have done it before Shabbat, you're not allowed to violate Shabbat to make the knife. On the other hand, to perform the Milah and do the Chabura, you can do it because you can't do that beforehand. You have to do that on Shabbat. With regards to Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, he says that even before Shabbat, you could have made the knife. Nevertheless, you're allowed to make it on Shabbat because Hechsherei Mitzvah are Dochim et HaShabbat. And as Tosafot points out over here, they used to intentionally make the knife on Shabbat to show the Chavibot HaMitzvah of doing Milah that it's Doche Shabbat. So they used to do this on Shabbat itself. But that's in the location of Rabbi Eliezer. They had a differentiated practice. In the city of Rabbi Yosef Glila, they used to eat chicken and milk together. because Rabbi Yosef Lili believed that only meat and milk were problematic, not chicken and milk, and therefore in his city they followed the practice of Rabbi Yosef Lili. Bimkomo shel Rabbi Lezer in. Only in the city of Rabbi Lezer did they do Aksheri Mitzvah, even on Shabbat itself, but Bimkomo shel Rabbi Akiva lo. But not in the place of Rabbi Akiva was the Baal Plukt of Rabbi Lezer, the Tanya. Kolal amar Rabbi Akiva, kol melacha she'efshar lasuta me'erev Shabbat, ein docheh et ha-Shabbat. Anything that was possible to do before Shabbat is not docheh et ha-Shabbat. And therefore, all these preparations for the milah, or things that facilitate the milah, could all have been done beforehand. And you cannot make the knife, chop the wood, make the fire and the coals to make the metal for the knife. That you cannot do on Shabbat itself. So you see that the practice of Rabbi Lezer was only in his city, but it didn't carry over to other cities. But Gemara says, V'hamai, tiyufta. I don't understand the whole question. What type of question is this? Mikomot, mikomot shiny. Wait a minute, you just said before that different locations are different. Even Abaye agreed when you're in two different cities, having different practices is not a problem. So your question is from Rabbi Lezer that he had a practice like this in his city? Basically, he had a practice like this in his city? That's not problematic according to anybody. That doesn't violate lo tasu agudot agudot. It's obvious what the answer to this question is. And therefore, the karila makarila. What was even the questioner's thought? Why did he think there's a question at all over here? Why did he bring these as questions? He knew the answer, or he should have known the answer up front. Because Shabbat is so stringent, or so fundamental, we would have think that you have to have a common practice across all places. Kamash Malon, that's not the case, that because Rabbi Lezer was in a separate city, that's not considered to be los tasu agudot agudot. But that really diminishes the question, it's not such a strong question anymore. Tashma, the Rabbi Abou ki iklo la'atre the Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. When he used to go to the city of Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, have a metaltel shrago. He used to carry around a candle. Not a candle that was lit, but a candle that had been lit before Shabbat, going to Shabbat benesh mashod and extinguished on Shabbat itself. So the, not the candle that's lit, but the candelabra that's holding it, he would carry that around on Shabbat and think that there's no problem with muktzeh. When he got to the city of Rabbi Yochanan, he wouldn't carry around a candle like this. V'hamai, kushya. What's the problem over here? V'lo amrinon mikomot mikomot shiny. Well, what's the question again? In one city he practiced like this, the other city practiced like that. Why is there a problem at all? He has differentiated practices in different cities. That is permitted. Where it says, Ananachi Gamina, this is our question. How could he do in one place act like this, and another place act like that? Meaning that how did he have two different practices himself? So where it says, Rabbi Abou, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Svirle. Rabbi Abou holds like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi that it's permitted to carry it around. He paskins like Rabbi Shimon, that is Ein Muksa. Ein Muksa, even in a case here where you were Docha it biyadayim going into Shabbat, there is no Muksa going to Rabbi Shimon, and he paskin like Rabbi Shimon. When he went to the city of Rabbi Yochanan, who paskin like Rabbi Huda, the truth is that in the Gemara in Shabbat, Rabbi Yochanan actually paskins like Rabbi Shimon, but in this extreme case of Muksa, then even Rabbi Shimon would agree according to Rabbi Yochanan, and that we find in a number of places in the Gemara in Shabbat that many of the Amoraim point out that even Rabbi Shimon will agree in certain extreme forms of Muksa. So over here, Rabbi Yochanan considers this to be an extreme form of muksa, and therefore he thinks the Psak Halach is like Rabbi Yehuda here, that it is muksa, because here you were doche bi yadayim. So Rabbi Yochanan says you can't carry it, because it's muksa. So therefore when Rabbi Abou went to the city of Rabbi Yochanan, he didn't carry it, mishum bodo to Rabbi Yochanan, out of kavod for Rabbi Yochanan. Vayika, shama, what about his attendant, his servant that went with him, Rabbi Abou? How would he know what to do? Now here the question can be one of two questions. The question can either be, how will the attendant of Rabbi Abou deal with the change in Rabbi Abou's practice? He's going to see Rabbi Abou with two different practices, and how is he going to deal with that? How do we explain it to him that Rabbi Abou is not inconsistent? Here he looks like he's inconsistent. That could be the possible question. Or the question, the way that Rashi phrases it over here is, how will the attendant of Rabbi Abou know in the city of Rabbi Yochanan to carry around a candelabra? How does he know that information? He sees Rabbi Abou carrying in other places, he'll continue that practice. And then he'll be a problem because he'll be in violation of the practice of that city. So why did not Rabbi Abou abstain from doing this everywhere so that that mistake wouldn't come about? So the Gemara says, no problem. The answer to both of those questions, the way they're phrased is, Demodi le l'shamo, he told his attendant. So either he explained to his attendant that the inconsistency in his practice was not really an inconsistency, He really believed that you could carry it. The reason he didn't carry it in the city of Rabbi Yochanan is because it was kavod for Rabbi Yochanan. So therefore, it would not be a chilul Hashem for the attendant, because he would realize that the practice is really consistent and not inconsistent. Or, according to the way Rashi phrases it over here, the fact that his attendant came to the city and might continue the practice of Rabbi Abo from the other cities that he was with him, that wouldn't happen here, because he let him know that in Rabbi Yochanan's city we have to do this because, out of kavod for Rabbi Yochanan, we have to follow his psak over here. And as Tosafot points out over here, we can't just say that there's no inconsistency in the position of Rabbi Abao, because when he sent to the city of Rabbi Yochanan, the reason that he didn't carry a candelabra or something that blew out on Shabbat is because he didn't have an opportunity to do it. So since he didn't have an opportunity, people won't be able to come to any conclusions about his Psak Halacha or the inconsistency in his Psak Halacha. Tosafot says no, because he says even when it fell on one of their cloaks, they wouldn't pick it up. So even in an instance where this case came up, Rabbi Abao would desist from picking it up in the Yatra of Rabbi Yochanan, that would be inconsistent in his position. And that's what the question was over here. How do we reconcile that position of Rabbi Abao? Okay, now the Gemara leaves this sugi of Lo Tidgodudu, and now tries to deal with the question about whether Beit Shammai actually practiced based on their psak. The Gemara, for the remainder of today's daf and into tomorrow's daf, will actually bring many, many cases, trying to bring us evidence as to which is the proper stance with regards to the practices of Beit Shammai. Did Beit Shammai just have a theoretical position, but they followed Beit Hillel in practice? Or did Beit Shammai follow their own Psak Halacha in practice, and there were differentiated opinions? We've solved the problem of Lo Tidgodudu already. We just want to know whether Beit Shammai really did have a differentiated practice or not. The Gemara first tries to bring evidence from here. Tashma, She'elu Osrim Ve'elu Matirim. Our Mishnah says that Beit Shammai was Oser and Beit Hillel was Matir, and vice versa. Lo Nimnu'u Beit Shammai Lisa Nashim Mi Beit Hillel V'lo Beit Hillel Mi Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai did not object to marrying women from Beit Hillel, and Beit Hillel did not object to marrying women from Beit Shammai, or did not avoid marrying women from the others group. Iyamar Bishlama Lo Asu. If you say their practice was not to follow their own psak, but that to follow Beit Hillel, that makes sense that they married, or quote-unquote, intermarried between the groups, because there was no problem. In the end, they both kept the halacha the same way. If you say that Beit Shammai had a differentiated practice, why didn't they not marry into each other's groups? Alright, Beit Shammai didn't withhold from marrying women from Beit Hillel, because the B'nai Chavi Lavi Ninu. The worst that you have here with regards to Beit Hillel's psak is, the woman went out to the shuk, and she needed chalitza. That's an Isur Lav. So at worst, the violation here is an Isur Lav, and the children that are produced are just B'nai Isurei Lav, which does not make them into Mamzerim. So it makes sense why Beit Shammai might marry the women from Beit Hillel. Tosfo points out, well, why don't they worry about the women themselves? Fine, the children are fine, but the woman herself is also problematic. So he says, V'yesh lomar detzaratz malo shchicha kulihai. This case wasn't so common, and therefore they worried more about the children, because one woman could produce multiple children versus a single tzarat erva. So therefore they would have withheld themselves had it been a problem of the children. But for the tzarats themselves, you don't worry about it, because she is a very small percentage of the population. So I understand why Beit Shammai might have married into the psak of Beit Hillel in their practice, but the other way around is very problematic. How did Beit Hillel marry women or children that were born from Beit Shammai's Psak Halacha carried out in practice? Ela Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, my lo nimnu. Why didn't they withhold from marrying women from them? B'nei chayvi kreitot, mamzeri ninhu. According to Beit Hillel, a tzarat ha'erva that marries the Yabam is violating the Isur Karet of Eshedach, and the product of that marriage is a mamzer, and they shouldn't be marrying in there, and they should have stopped from marrying in there. So Gemara says, that Beit Hillel believes that a mamzer is not produced out of a illegal or illicit marriage that involves a chiyuv karet. Only from a chiyuv mitat beitin does you produce a mamzer. So that's why they allow their children to marry together those from Beit Shammai. V'amar Rabbi Elazar, which we'll get to later on the daf, afal pi shenechlugu Beit Shammai Beit Hillel b'tzarot. Even though they argued about the co-wives, modim shein mamzer lemish yisro yisro ervav anush karet. They both agree that a punishment of karet is sufficient to generate a mamzer over here. El alav shmamina lo asu. From here you would conclude that Beit Shammai did not act on their own psak halacha, because otherwise why would Beit Hillel ever agree to marry women from Beit Shammai? Mer says, look, Le'olam asu. No, Beit Shammai had their own practice based on their own Pesach Halacha. So then how did Beit Hillel marry into Beit Shammai? The Modelahu Uparshe. That Beit Shammai warned Beit Hillel. When Beit Hillel came in to marry into families of Beit Shammai let them know that this was the family that would not be okay for Beit Hillel. This is a family that followed the Pesach of Beit Shammai, which Beit Hillel would think is Mamzerim. And they avoided those families, so they helped them out. Again, it's a beautiful idea. Rashi quoted this in the Mishnah. Rashi quoted the conclusion of the Gemara. It's interesting because Rashi many times gives you the Havamina of the Gemara, so you understand why the Gemara says later on. Over here in our Mishnah, Rashi brought you the conclusion that they used to inform them of the fact that these women were not ruim for them. They said, I might have a difference in opinion, but I understand your opinion. I respect your opinion, and since I respect your opinion, I'm not going to let you marry into people from Beit Shammai or women from Beit Shammai that are problematic according to your position. Or says, Vachanami Mistavra, that makes sense that the Mishnah is read this way. Tiktani Seifa, because the latter half of the Mishnah, Kol Taro V'chol Tameot Shayu Elu Mitarim V'elu Mitamim, you have a machlok between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel with regards to Tuman Tara. Lo Nimnu Osim Taro De'lo Agabe Elo. They didn't stop from borrowing Kelim one from the other. They interacted without any problems or chashashot about Tuma and Tara. Iyamar Bishlama Modilu. If they informed them about the Pesach Halacha that they were following, whether it was good for Beit Hillel or not, Mishum Halki Lo Nimnu. That's why they did not withhold from interacting with regards to Tuma and Tara. Iyamar Delo Modilu. If you tell them that they did not inform them, then Bishlama Beit Shammai Beit Hillel Lo Nimnu. Then it makes sense why Beit Shammai didn't worry about the Kelim of Beit Hillel, the Tmeot, the Beit Hillel, the Beit Shammai Tarot, because that which is Tmei for Beit Hillel is Tahor for Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel is the Chumra Ninhu. They were the Machmir over here, and that's why Beit Shammai was happy. Ela Beit Hillel mi Beit Shammai, lama lo nimnu, Tarot to Beit Shammai, the Beit Hillel Tmeot Ninhu. Why did Beit Hillel accept the Tarot of Beit Shammai? Because the Kulot of Beit Shammai, according to Beit Hillel, are Tmeot. And how could it be that Beit Hillel borrowed the Kelim or worked with those people from Beit Shammai? Elalab, what must be the answer? The Modilu, that they told them, they informed them, and therefore there was not this problem. Shmamina, from here that you can conclude, first of all, that they informed them. This is the Girsa that we have in our Gemara. The Girsa is somewhat problematic because it indicates here that with regards to Tuman Tara, Beit Hillel is the Chumra. We find two cases in the Mishnayot and Ediyot where there's a list and a parak there of Chumrei Beit Hillel over Beit Shammai. Two of those cases deal with Tuma and Tara. So in those two cases, Beit Hillel is more machmir than Beit Shammai. But otherwise, al harov, Beit Hillel is mekil l'gabei Tuma and Tara. Therefore, Tosafot al-Pi Arach, Rabbeinu Chananel, says that the girsa should be just the opposite over here. The girsa should read, Bishlama Beit Hillel lo nimnu umi Beit Shammai. The Beit Hillel, of course, accepted the Kelim of Beit Shammai. The Tumot of Beit Shammai, the Beit Hillel Torot Ninu. Because Beit Shammai is machmir, then for Beit Hillel, the Kelim of Beit Shammai that are Tahor are certainly Tahor, because even their Tmeot are Tahor for them, because they are Mekil. But the other question is with regards to the other way around. Beit Shammai, how did they borrow Kelim from Beit Hillel? They would assume that the Kelim of Beit Hillel were Tmeot, so how did they borrow from them? Now, Hash to the Fiat Girsa, Muchok Shapir, Do Odio Modiluhu. According to this Girsa, Tosafot says it's clear that they must have told them something, afilu lo asu. Even if they did not act, even if Beit Shammai did not follow their own Pesach Halacha, nevertheless, it would make sense to say that they informed them about this information. Because you can't say that the reason that Beit Shammai did not worry about the Kelim for Beit Hillel is because they practiced like Beit Hillel. Ella, what was the reason that Beit Shammai practiced like Beit Hillel? Shlo tasu agudot agudot. But we already established by Lo Tasu Agudot Agudot that if you're the Chumra, then it's okay, because you'll just say, I don't need this Kli, I won't borrow this Kli. You can act the Chumra because it's not clear you're doing it out of a halachic necessity. It's because you're doing it because maybe you don't need it, or you are not willing to borrow from this individual. Nothing to do with Tuma and Tara. So therefore, Beit Shammai could have been Machmir like their position, still not been a problem of Agudot Agudot, and yet they still borrowed Kelim from Beit Hillel. Why would they borrow from Beit Hillel? That's because Modilahu. They gave them that information. Beit Hillel gave Beit Shammai the information so that they could continue their practice, the Chumra, without it being obvious that there's a problem of Agudot, Agudot. And therefore over here, there would be no problem of Beit Shammai acting on their own Pesach Halacha, even if you would think in the case of Tzarot Erevah that they did not act on it, because there it's obvious that they were acting under their own psak, but over here it's not so obvious, and therefore they would have continued their practice. The only question is, Modilo, did they inform them? And here it's pretty clear that according to both opinions, the way that we have the Girsa and the Rach, that Beit Shammai, consistent with their practice with Tzaret HaErva, would only desist from following in practice their Psak Halacha, where it created a problem of a Gudot HaGudot. But in a case where it's a Chumrah that's not obvious that they are deviating from the Halacha, they would keep their own Psak Halacha, even according to the one who says that they did not follow their own practice. Over here, they would have followed their own practice. And nevertheless, Modi Lohu, that was how we solved the problem over here. Modi Lohu, and that would be according to both opinions, and that's the Kamash Malona of the Gemara. Then the Gemara says, Umay Ume Dahach Mehach, why is the second part of the Mishnah better than the first part of the Mishnah? The first part of the Mishnah, we said that they were willing to marry each other's daughters. Yet, in the second half of the Mishnah, we said, oh, they're willing to take Tumah and Taharot from each other. Ah, we said, oh, from the second half, you see that it's clear that they informed each other. Why can't you come to that conclusion from the first half of the Mishnah? The Gemara says, Ma'udutema Tzara Kali Itla, that a Tzara Te'erva is something that's well known and public. So nobody had to inform. It was self-informing because it was something that had publicity associated with it. And that publicity already gave them the information they needed. But the second case by Tumah Tahara, which are clearly not things of the public nature, there we say clearly the reason that they are allowed to utilize each other's utensils is because Modi Lohu, that they informed them. That's why the second proof is better than the first proof, that they actually informed them. Now Gemara says, Gufa, Amar Rabbi Lozer, Afu Pish Nechugu Beit Shammai Beit Hillel B'Tzeraot, Modim Shein Mavzer Elamish Yisro Yisur Erva Banush Karet. That even though Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel have a machloket over here with regards to Tzaret Erva, nevertheless they agree that a Mamzer can be produced out of an Yisur Erva that involves a punishment of Karet. So Man Modim, who admits to whom over here? Ilema Beit Shammai, the Beit Hillel, what? Beit Shammai agrees to Beit Hillel's position. Pshita, B'nei Chai Ve'lavin, Kisherim Ninhu. Of course, Beit Shammai doesn't worry about marrying the girls from Beit Hillel, because at worst, they're B'nei Lav. They're just a product of a violation of a Lav, which is that the woman may not marry a third party without Chalitza. So of course, Beit Shammai agrees to the position of Beit Hillel. There's no Chiddush in that. Ella Beit Hillel to Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel agrees to Beit Shammai's position. He Gufa Chai Ve'gritodi. How could they agree to Beit Shammai's position and say, oh, if the girl marries, the Tzaret HaErva marries the Yabam, everything's fine. That's a Chai Ve'gritot. And that produces a Mamzer. That's the problem that Beit Hillel is worried about. That's exactly what they say here. This is an Yisur Erva. So how could you say they agree to Beit Shammai in this case? So the Gemara says, no, the Olam Beit Shammai to Beit Hillel. That Beit Shammai agrees to Beit Hillel's position. But La'afuke mid Rabbi Akiva, we thought that the machloket is between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel with regards to, and we said Modim, they admit to the other's position. We thought one of them agreed with the other with regards to Tzaret HaErva. That we don't need, that the Gemara rejected. So the Gemara here says no, that what they agreed about was that Rabbi Akiva's din is incorrect. That when it comes to Amar Yesh Mamzer Mechayve Lavin, Rabbi Akiva thinks that even from a Chayve Lav, there is a production of a mamzer. That means that a woman who is omei the chalitza and ends up marrying a third party without doing chalitza, according to Rabbi Akiva, that would produce a mamzer. And that would be even problematic for Beit Shammai than to marry the women from Beit Hillel. Because it wouldn't just be an Isser Lav. It would be an Isser Lav that produces a mamzer. So what the Braita comes to teach you is modim. Beit Shammai the Beit Hillel, that a mamzer is only produced from Chiyuvei Karet. And therefore they were okay to marry the women from Beit Hillel's households, because at worst they were children of a lav, not children that were mamzerim. And so that's what the modeh is over here. Not that either of them changed their opinion, but just with regards to Beit Shammai vis-a-vis Beit Hillel's opinion, they were willing to marry the women from Beit Hillel because they agree with Beit Hillel that only a mamz is only produced through chiyuvei kreitut, not like Rabbi Akiva that's produced through a chayvei lav. And therefore the women of Beit Hillel were only children of a chayvei lav, which is not problematic to marry. They were not children that were designated or tagged as mamzerim. Tashma, here's another proof as to whether Beit Shammai or Beit Hillel differentiated in their practices or not. Afal pi shenechlagu Beit Shammai Beit Hillel b'tzarot, u'b'achayot, u'b'get yashan, u'b'safek eshrish, u'megareshet ishto, v'lana imo b'pundak. Kesef v'shava kesef, pruta v'shava pruta. So here are all these cases where we have machlokin between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Let's go through each one of them. Tzarat Erva is our mission over here. Achayot is a Mishnah later on in the Masechta, by case where you have four brothers, two of which are married to two sisters, and then those two brothers pass away without children, and the two sisters fall to the other two brothers to marry them. In that case, we say that they have to be choleitz, do chalitza, because you have a problem of achot zikutato. Each one of the women is partially married to him because of the zika, because of the connection of yibum through the brother that passed away. And because of that, if he marries one of the women, or takes one of them to form even with them, the other one is affected because he's half married to that woman. That's true of both brothers. Except in a case where one is Asur Lezeh and Mutar Lezeh, and one's Asur Lezeh and Mutar Lezeh, which we dealt with in Daf Tet, Rabbi Chiya, that will also be mentioned in the Mishnah later on. But what happens if the two brothers, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, Reuben and Shimon are married to Rachel and Leah, who are sisters, Reuben and Shimon pass away, and then Levi marries Rachel to be Miyabemer, and Yehuda marries Leah to be Miyabemer, they've done it already. They didn't ask us, they did it. And they perform Yibum. What's the din? So there, Beit Hillel says, Teitzu, you have to divorce them, you have to do Chalitza. And Beit Shammai says, Itkaimu, they can stay there. So that's another machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Get Yashan is a husband wrote a get to give to his wife. He dated it, wrote it, and then just hadn't given it. And in the interim period between the time that he wrote the get, he is mityached, he's together with his wife during that period of time. And then later on decides that he's ready to divorce her and uses that get. Is that get pasul because of what happened in the interim? From the time that the get was dated, they had lived together like husband and wife. Does that posel the get? Does that ruin the get? So Beit Hillel says that it's problematic and you cannot give that as a get. Whereas Beit Shammai says you can still use that get to you give and to divorce this woman. Uba safek eshet ish here, it's not clear what this is referring to. Rashi brings down one interpretation that we're talking about a ktana. When is a ktana allowed to perform miyun? To annul the marriage. So Beit Hillel says she can annul the marriage whether it's only Erusin, Kiddushin, or even if it's Nisuin, she can annul the marriage. Beit Shammai says she can only annul the marriage if it's only Erusin. But once it reaches the level of Nisuin, she can no longer annul the marriage because we don't want her going on and marrying all these different men and she will become Hefker. So therefore we try to protect the Ktana and say that she cannot annul from Nisuin, but she waits till she becomes a Gdola, gets a full-fledged divorce, and then moves on from that point forward. That's one interpretation Rashi brings down. Rashi brings a second interpretation, which is talking about a Shchimera. Someone's on their deathbed and says to their wife, here's your get from now if I die from this sickness. So now she's Tluya. If he dies from this sickness, the get is effective than the divorce from today. On the other hand, if he survives or he's healthy and he gets up from this sickness, they're not divorced. So what is the status of the woman between the time that he gives the get, where the effective date is now, and the time where we know whether he passes away or not? In that interim period, she's a safek eshet ish. So Rashi says that's the other possibility of what is transpiring over here, about a safek eshet ish. But the next case in the Mishnah is umigaresh et ishto v'leno imo bepundak. Person who divorced his wife, and then after that has yichud with the woman that he had just divorced. So the machlok between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel says, hein hein eide yichud, hein hein eide biya. Even though we have no evidence that they slept together, nevertheless, since they were mityached together, the same edim that tell us they were mityached are also the edim that they're now, quote-unquote, married again because they were alone. Beit Shammai says, we don't make that leap, that just because they're mityached, we need separate edim for the nisuin. Otherwise, just because we have Edim of Yichud, that doesn't mean they're automatically married. So Tosafot asks on Rashi and says that case of Safek Eshet Ish is basically this case again, which is in these interim stages, what's the status? So here, they can be mityached again together, and now you have a Safek Eshet Ish. That's the same problem or question that you raised with the case of the get, and we're wondering whether he's going to die or not die, whether the get's effective or not. So again, what happens in the interim if they're mityached? Or what happens in the interim if this woman has an extramarital affair? What's the status of this woman? That's the same question we're asking with regards to Lana Mimbo Bipundak. Therefore, Tosafot says that explanation doesn't make sense. The way that the Tosafot Yishanim says that there are those that say that Yesh Mefarshim Safek Eshet Ish Hainu Megaresh Ishto V'Lana Mimbo Bipundaki. That Safek Eshet Ish is explained. That's colon. What's that case? Megaresh Ishto V'Lana Mimbo Bipundak. So he solved the problem or the question on Rashi by basically making them into a single case and saying they aren't separate. They are one case. Kesef and Shavah Kesef is the first Mishnah in Kiddushin. How do you perform Kiddushin with money? Beit Hillel says that you can use a pruta, ubishave pruta. You can use a copper coin to perform Kiddushin. Beit Shammai says you have to use Kesef. You have to use silver or Kesef Tzuri, which is a Tyrian coin. And that, the lowest denomination of that is a dinar. And so you have to have a dinar Kesef or the equivalent of a dinar Kesef in order to get married. So they argue about what is the minimum amount of money to create Kiddushin. We pass on like Beit Hillel, obviously, but Beit Hillel's opinion is Pruta and Shave Pruta, and Beit Shammai's opinion is Dinar Kesef over Shave Dinar Kesef. So here we have all these different machlokot between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. But, nevertheless, lo nimnu Beit Shammai m'lisa nashim be Beit Hillel, v'lo Beit Hillel m'Beit Shammai. Nevertheless, they were willing to marry women from each other's families, despite their differences in halachot that have ramifications in terms of mamzerut, in terms of chiyuvei karet. To teach you how much love and consideration they had one from the other, the kayim ashneamar, to keep the pasuk in Zechariah, which is ha'emet v'shalom ehavu, that you should love truth and peace. And this is a very important pasuk there in Zechariah. It talks about that I'm not so interested in your ben adam l'makom, I'm much more interested in your ben adam l'chaveiro. What's more important than a ben adam l'makom is a ben adam l'chaveiro. Yes, ben adam l'makom is important, and you have to keep it. Just because you keep ben adam l'chaveiro does not mean you don't have to keep ben adam l'makom. But ben adam l'chaveiro cannot be trumped ben adam l'makom. And therefore over here, that's what the pasuk in Zechariah says, and that's what the Gemara is saying that happened with Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. They had differences of opinions, but despite their differences in opinions and their halacha l'maaseh, their halacha with regards vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nevertheless, they treat each other in a way that was ava v'reyut between them. Their differences in halachic opinions, it was not pogeya in the way that they treated or conducted themselves one to the other. And therefore, they're mekayim that pasuk in Zechariah, which is emet v'shalom e'avu. That's the most important thing. Rav Shimon Omar nimnu, hein min avadai lo nimnu min asafek. They did not marry into families where it was vadai this way, or it was vadai based on the opinion that argues on them. But if it was only a safek, they did not withhold themselves. Iyamart bishlamasu. If you say Beit Shammai acted on their psak halacha, mishum achi nimnu, then there's a reason according to Rabbi Shimon for them not to marry into the families of Beit Hillel, or Beit Hillel into the families of Beit Shammai. Eliyamart lo asu, amai nimnu. If they never practiced Beit Shammai according to their psak, then why would they withhold? Everybody paskins and they end like Beit Hillel. What's their reason not to marry into each other's families? Where it says, v'tizbra, this whole thing makes sense? Nei namidasu. Let's assume that they did act on their own psak. Bishlama Beit Hillel nimnu mi Beit Shammai dechavei kreito ninu. I understand why Beit Hillel did not marry into the families of Beit Shammai, because there you have a risk of marrying a mamzer. And that's a big problem, because you have an issue of mamzerut. U'mamzerim eim leBeit Hillel, and they can't marry a mamzer. Or leBeit Shammai, amai nimnu mi Beit Hillel. Why doesn't Beit Shammai marry into the families of Beit Hillel? B'nei chayvei lav ininu. They're only a product of an Isur Lav, and there's no pgam in the children. Uksherim ninu. They're fully ksherim, and you can marry them without any problem. Kedama Rav Nach Mitzvach, no nitzucha l'tzarat sma. No, the answer here is that we need this for the woman herself. You're right. As far as the children are concerned, there was no reason for Beit Shammai not to marry into the families of Beit Hillel. But because of the woman herself, there is a reason Beit Shammai shouldn't marry in, because order to them, you'd be in violation of a lav. And we can't let you marry this woman in violation of the lav. So, Achanami, that's the case here. Lo nitzucha l'tzaratzma. We'll get to the core place where Rav Nachman Yitzchak says this in tomorrow's daf, but we're saying that the same thing applies here. The reason that Beit Shammai did not marry into the families of Beit Hillel, according to Rabbi Shimon, is because there was a chance that you could marry one of these women who was a tzarat ha'erva, never got chalitza, and then you could be in violation of a lav. Now the Gemara says, okay, let's understand Rabbi Shimon's position. Who? Why is it by the Vadai they didn't marry into these families? Because there's an Isur involved. Safek Nami Isura. Safek Doraitor. Safek of Alocho is also Asur. So why can you marry into these families? Gemara says, Lo Tema Mina Safek. Don't say that it was from a family where there was a Safek about whether they practiced like Beit Shammai or not. Eloema Mina Stam. Mina Stam they didn't want to hold themselves from marrying into the families. If they went to the family and nobody said anything to them, they would marry into that family. Because they would assume in a stam that the default situation was that it was conducted in a way that would be fine for them. Demodilahu parshet. Because if there was a problem, they knew for certain that Beit Shammai would inform them of the problem, and then they would not marry into that family. And the same would be true in the reverse. If there was a woman who was a tzarat ereva, Beit Hillel would inform Beit Shammai, so they didn't run into that problem. So if nobody informed them of this information, they assumed by default that they were allowed to marry into these families. Umayk Mashmalan, what's that teaching us? Dava v'reyut no'agim zeh b'zeh? That they were acting toward each other in a proper manner, that they showed love and kindness and consideration for each other? Haina Reisha, you already told me that from the Reisha, but it's Rabbi Shimon adding. Where it says, Akamashmalan dekulo Rabbi Shimon, that comes to teach us that Rabbi Shimon's the author of the entire Brayta over here, and that Rabbi Shimon's opinion about the way that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel conduct themselves to each other is borne out by this case where Rabbi Shimon says that nimnu, there were cases where they did not marry into the families, but what they taught you is that in general they did have a practice to marry into the families, and there was this beautiful ava v'reyut, love and kindness and consideration that existed between them. That's all authored by Rabbi Shimon. Now, as far as our question is about whether a Beit Shammai had the practice or not, so from this bright there would be a conclusion that they did act on this, but it's only Rabbi Shimon's opinion that Asub Divrei Beit Shammai get Divreihem. But we don't have a consensus that that was the practice, and therefore the Gemara is going to continue with this tomorrow, trying to find a conclusive statement that shows us that either Beit Shammai did practice according to their Psak Halacha or did not practice according to their Psak Halacha. Okay, we're going to stop over here, five lines from the bottom of Yudalad Amud Bet.